This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
We thought we'd talk to Amy Middleton first. Amy's written a piece in the Sunday about funding sources flowing to LGBTI events. She's joining us on the phone. Amy, good morning.
Good morning. How is everyone?
How are you, Ames? Good.
Oh, Ames, this is all getting very informal. Oh, no. Getting there, Dave.
we are on first name basis with Amy, aren't we, Dale?
Yes. Yeah, good mates from way back.
That's right. Great to have you on the wires again.
No worries.
On
good
the
to
wires.
Be here.
You're even shortening wireless now to wires.
Yeah.
Oh, he's so with it.
Oh, he's totes. Cool now.
Hey, loved your piece in The Age, Amy.
Yes.
No, thanks.
Really good piece. That was on December the 10th. I know you've had one even more recently than that, but the one on the 10th was really all about the relationship between business and the queer community and ways in which business can actually support the queer community. You did make a very interesting point that we actually need to be very careful that that support doesn't actually result in what you refer to as commodification. Can I ask you to explore that point a bit more? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I find myself in an interesting position at the helm of Archer Magazine, where we're sort of maybe equal parts sort of advocacy and activism and also a commercial product, and we need to be viable to survive. And, I mean, that goes for all organisations, but particularly media, because you need to get your product into the hands of readers. So occasionally we get approached by businesses that want to partner with us, and the focus seems to be on sort of what we can offer them commercially. And the truth is that LGBT organisations are, you know, generally have a niche reach and a niche audience by definition and by necessity. So our numbers aren't as big as Australian Women's Weekly or, you know, even particularly magazines like DNA, because we're a little bit more niche than even some of the queer press. So sometimes our readerships don't look as big as others, but it doesn't mean that they're any less valuable. And I guess I want to point out that when you do offer support to LGBTI organisations, it shouldn't be for this idea of a stamp of approval, you know, that you support equality. It should be because it comes from an authentic place.
It's got to be about the values.
Mm.
So would you accept sponsorship from News Corp?
I'd have to have a big chat with my team about it. We sort of take every sponsor on a case-by-case basis. So we have a couple of partners that are alcohol brands, and we kind of had a big chat about whether that was appropriate given there are high levels of alcohol use in the queer community. But we decided that, I guess, it was in line with our readers' interests and lifestyles, and we partnered with a couple of different alcohol brands. And that's been really great for us because we can sell the drinks at our launch, and it's one of our key fundraising activities. But if the Liberal Party offered us money for promotion, I think we'd probably say no in 2016.
Amy, I want to flip it. I work in public relations and marketing with brands, and we are constantly seeing the reduction of journalists and organisations and print. So we are starting to focus more energy on niche publications in taking some of our brands to those niche publications. There was a time where it was, and you may remember the phrase, the pink dollar. That doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. But there is certainly, or there are brands, and I work with consumer brands, there are brands that we sit down and look at and we go, this would fit within publishing or within these publications, within the LGBT market, not because it is something that will attract a pink dollar, but conversely, this is something that we've seen in our community, that we've seen from a lifestyle point of view, that it's been, there's been an uptake. It's also on trend, and I think one of the things about our community is we tend to be on trend, if I can talk in marketing or branding terms.
We're pretty cool, aren't we?
Well, we are generally. Super cool. So if there is a new trend, and there is a new trend in wine that we're seeing grow and grow and grow, which is savoury dry rosé. So for me, there is sense in marketing to or providing sponsorship to or editorial to LGBT publications, because we are on trend, and so there is a move within our industry to deal more with niche publications and less with that broad scattergun approach of let's send the wine to wine writers and hope we get a result. It's more now about lifestyle rather than sort of the old school journalism.
Yeah, and if I can add something to that, I think the days of kind of, I think there's a big push towards transparency in a lot of kind of facets of our society these days, and the kind of, I guess the marketing collateral of old in print journalism particularly was all about numbers and not so much about actual value or actual
Correct.
Return.
Mm.
And these days I think there's a move away from that. So at Archer we're always 100% honest about our audience, and it's not huge, but it's super fierce. And all our magazines get sold out every issue. And when we market something to our readership, which is rarely, there's really high uptake and really positive response, because there's that level of trust and loyalty that exists, which possibly doesn't exist with bigger media outlets.
We've even changed our formula in that there used to be this number of people buy this amount of advertising dollars each equals this amount of value for my client. We've switched that around, where we actually go this amount of this smaller amount of numbers equals a better engagement, and we add another layer to the sum. So we end up with a much more, I think, and Macca, you would probably work on something similar as well with the brands you work with.
And look, you know, I look at, everyone knows who I work for. I'm not going to say it. If you don't work it out, Google me. But we advertise and market in a whole lot of different areas. The events is a huge thing for a lot of companies. But again, I know that our marketing and our advertising, at its core, it's about values that the company has. And there are platforms we won't advertise on. There are platforms where we have reduced the amount that we will advertise. And, you know, I was interested, Amy, you know, one of the things that, you know, you were talking about in one of the articles was, you know, that corporates to support grassroots LGBTI organisations, a lot do, but there's a little area that a lot of people perhaps don't always think about, is that a lot of companies have compliance policies around supporting anything, now it's big inverted commas, political. Now, in political, often it includes advocacy. And whilst the company might want to, or the people in the company might want to do it, the policies of the company sometimes stop them. So that's why they might fund more of an umbrella organisation rather than a specific program or an organisation that is,
interesting
is,
point.
Is set up, even though in a lot of cases they will actually agree with the issue, but their internal policies, and particularly for multinational companies, it's a very, very difficult area.
It's a really valid point. There's another question I wanted to ask, Amy. I think as we've demanded and seen acceptance and inclusion, and we want to be less niche as a community. You know, we're seeing the fall of the amount of LGBT specific venues, events, and that sort of thing. Is because we have demanded that level of acceptance and integration that there is less of a need for some of these smaller organisations to exist?
No, I don't think so at all. I think some parts of the queer community and our many, many battles that we fight do kind of include this sense of, I guess, homogenisation with the rest of society. But I think on a really deep level, the experience of a queer person is always a little harder in Western society than the experience of someone who's not queer. And I think that to say that we don't need safe spaces or our own spaces would be a little bit ridiculous.
Oh, no, not saying we don't need them, but I think we need less of them because of that homogenisation that we've demanded.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. No, the Archer community doesn't really... that's not what I'm hearing from our readers. They're all so, so keen to attend our events because they know that they're going to be safe spaces. But an example of this, at our last event, our last issue focused on non-binary and gender-fluid identities. And at our event, our launch event, the MC gave a little word up to the crowd about the fact that you shouldn't assume anybody's gender pronouns when speaking to or about people at this event. And also, if you want to kind of touch somebody or ask some personal questions, you should ask first. And just laid out these really simple ground rules about how to respectfully engage with people with non-binary identities. And you just don't get that anywhere. And I think that's probably something that would be lost if we lost our own spaces. And it's also kind of a safe space where you can discuss identity politics without the kind of judgmental ears of the outside, which is something that we all benefit from, I reckon.
So that's an interesting point, Amy, because what we've seen over the last couple of years has been the demise of the, you know, the traditional gay and lesbian venues.
That's because we're not going, Tess.
Well, you may not be. Do you think there's a relationship there, or is this really just about commercial interests?
I think it's hard in this economy to have to start up anything and maintain anything. I can't really speak to that. I'm from Sydney, not Melbourne, and I haven't really got my head around how queer venues or gay venues in Melbourne work because it seems really different from Sydney. But in Sydney, you can still go to a bar and expect to see, you know, more than half of the people identifying with, sexual diversity or sexually diverse identities. So, I don't know. Are there still bars like that in Melbourne?
I think you make it...
Not many.
You've raised a really interesting point, which is the difference between the two cities. I think we're seeing, certainly knowing Sydney and having lived in Sydney for half a dozen years or more, there are a lot more venues that cater to specific communities, whereas here I think we see less and less of them because there is a more integrated approach to, you know, we've got a venue, the venue is cool, the cool people will come, and, you know, whether those cool people are gay, black,
whatever,
lesbian. Yeah.
But the contradiction inherent here is that people don't feel safe unless there's a safe space.
Correct, but I think we're seeing less of that in Melbourne than certainly in Sydney. And maybe I don't know whether there's an obvious difference in our communities. I'd like to have the knowledge to be able to talk to it. But
I think one of the key differences I noticed was that the safe spaces or the spaces that are marketed at queer people or the LGBTI community, they happen sort of, I guess, on events or special events. So you'll have like a party once a month or a party three times a year rather than a venue that just sticks around all the time.
Look, there certainly are some here.
There's definitely tons of queer parties around, tons of them in Melbourne.
But if the Laird still exists, Circuit I know still exists.
Still does,
What was on Commercial Road in Prahran is almost gone. There's very few specific venues over that way. So I think we're sort of, it's almost, I used to say that you could drop a pin in the middle of Melbourne and take a compass and draw a circle around it. And in every corner within that circle, you would find an LGBT community, Richmond and Fitzroy and Thornbury and Footscray and Essendon. We tend to be less ghetto. Less ghetto-wise than we used to be, I suppose.
Yeah, I wonder if it does have more to do with economics than identity politics.
I think it's a combination.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.